The Steve Cochran Show.
Chicago, Chicago, that toddling town.
That was Alderman Ed Burke doing the goal call. Did you hear that?
Yeah, it was good.
Chicago, yeah. I will show
Mayor Rahm Emanuel in studio. Congratulations in a continuing, not just effort, I mean, a successful endeavor to make Chicago the event city that it deserves to be, the MLS All-Star Game tonight. Are you throwing out the first pitch?
Yeah, you know what? There's hope for you, Steve. It says there's a 12-step program. You're starting at half step. I'm really impressed.
What do you do to start a soccer game ceremony? Do you kick out the first?
You look at the shin of the opponent, take your target and hit it.
No, not city council.
You know what? What's that?
Not city council. So.
That'd be a good way to end a meeting with city council. It actually would.
Yeah, you know, I said that yesterday. You know, all these kids, I was down on the fourth floor. It was night out and building relationship between community and residents, and there were kids doing the kung fu exercises, and then they bowed, and the head of the class made him bow at the direction. I was there with two aldermen. I said, I'm going to start having city council do this.
Bow you?
Yeah, at the end of city council, after we've knocked some wood out, yeah, I would
That's
like that.
Namaste.
You know what, though? This is it's sold out. This is a Major League All-Star Soccer. You know, Chicago Fire is doing quite well here in the city. But we have Real Madrid playing here. It's a great event for the city. And we also have now the conference for the soccer coaches coming for the next three times, but over the next 5-6 years.
Now, when you and I were growing up, soccer was always going to be the next big thing. It's going to be the next big thing. It finally feels like it's the thing.
Well, I played soccer.
I bet you did.
And that's the reason I started ballet, because in the off season I wanted to improve my soccer game, and I took up ballet, and then I realized 30 guys, 20 women. I went to the 20 women.
It was the right call.
Right, yeah, you think it was
good? It was the right call.
One guy, 20 women. I can get these odds. That was good for me.
You know what? That's how I got into politics. Problem solving.
Oh, right, yeah.
You look at this, and I didn't need a big data computer. I could figure that out.
Sit down on the
bench. Or go to the bar.
Right. Perfect.
Now I have some swag for you guys.
Hold on.
2017 All-Star Baseball hat right here.
Bring it up.
Look at that.
There you go. What are we doing here?
Coffee mug.
You got a cup there. Now, we have enough for everybody. Don't start crying. Look at those eyes.
I know.
Oh, my God.
No. He's pointing at Dave Bennett and saying, Dave's got to wear his mind.
He knows.
Now, Steve. Let's just say this is not the same size as the one I got. Okay,
no,
mine also came with a name and the number 17.
So that's the Target MLS All-Star Game swag.
We got a Sharpie. We can write.
And this is
on
the petite I ordered.
Yeah, this is the petite. This is the extra small.
Yes,
we have one for every. We have actually extras.
Ooh,
okay, for the sound man, because you don't ever get any recognition, brother, back there.
Okay,
so we have Dave.
There you go, buddy.
Can I say this?
Thank you, Mayor.
Dave's puppy eyes, as if
you
got caught. With puppy eyes, like, that is, I never get my fair share, and I do the sports.
See?
Here it is, brother.
Mayor read Dave Bennett like a book.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Yeah. Taking care. Dave. Dave, once you get the shirt, you
don't
have to
ever
bow.
Say Hanukkah Harry. Did not bring something. Okay?
You have to bow. Once you get the shirt, you have to bow.
When I leave, I would like the take on the bow, okay? I would like
awesome.
The photo of my bow when that happens. And then also,
all right, here you go.
Now,
the bat, okay?
Working the lid.
All right. You guys get it, all right? Don't ever say Uncle Rami didn't bring you something.
Sign the banner.
We'll sign the banner.
This is the first time you've come in and the gifts weren't provided by your wife, Amy.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, but let me say this. She went through the bag first and decided what she wanted versus you guys got the hand-me-downs.
That's okay. Well, thanks, Amy.
Actually, I will say this. The gray T-shirt. I know you guys got the soccer. It's one of. I'm not joking. I actually like this.
That's cool.
Oh, that's nice.
That's for the backyard and the barbecue. Yeah. Cut the sleeves.
Right.
Okay, Steve?
Yeah.
Cut the sleeves.
Cut the sleeves.
Okay.
Listen, your biceps and mine.
Yeah,
come on, let's go.
It's the same thing, brother.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, Target had a...
you can put that down now, Steve.
Target,
you're holding that up a little long there.
It's a photo op. You know photo ops. You experienced one or two.
Are you kidding? Rahm photo op Emanuel.
Target had the deal set up yesterday behind us here at Pioneer Court. Got tons of stops.
No, but to the core, first of all, I want to give a shout out to Andrew from the Chicago Fire, the owners. they actually do a lot of investment in kids' activities through the park district throughout the city of Chicago. Sure. We've built 50 fields in the city in the last 6 years.
It's a big deal. Yes. Kids got to have a place to play.
And it's great for the city to have this soccer game here. It's really wonderful.
Congratulations on that. Now, I got a couple of other things I want to ask you about, as you would well guess. Yeah.
Now, enough with the kids and helping them develop. Right. Let's get to something else.
Let's get to Scaramucci.
You didn't even take a breath. But go ahead. Let's get to the other person you would not let near kids.
I am fascinated by the mooch. I asked, I talked to Senator Durbin yesterday about this. In all your years in politics,
no.
You've never met anybody like this guy?
That's not true.
Not Matt. Matt's not right. You've never seen anyone in an official position like this guy. Not even a White House. Maybe a congressional aide, somebody.
This is going to get me in trouble, and he'll hear about it, and they'll go crazy. Dick Morris. Dick Morris would be the closest, I would say. But, you know, the mooch, still about 20 feet distance.
A communications director that F-bombs his way through an on-the-record interview. You can't make that up.
There's no guardrails for him, and he needs some guardrails.
Well, it's not even an F-bomb. We use that word off the air quite often, but the vulgar
I would like the record to say I do not use it.
I know. Okay. Yeah,
well, not on air.
No, but the vulgar terms, you know, the X.
Yeah, he suggested a position that Steve Bannon can't get in, not even with help.
It would be on, you know, National Geographic.
You know what? You're not lying. But from the chief of staff position, this is a position you held. Just in regards to the gatekeeping portion of this,
yeah.
What's more important in regards to Kelly now, the people you say no to or the people you say yes to? The people you give access to or the people you make sure don't
get it? Everybody's about access. Let me try to break this down. First of all, there's two titles, chief and staff, and you're both. And you gotta remember, and sometimes in the same moment, you're both.
Okay.
You're running the staff for the president, but you are the chief of it. So you're the first among all equals from a staff position. Second is, look, he has, I would say, right now you could say, the trust of the president. So good. Check. Clearly, having worked with him, he has a sense of order and discipline. Check. What's not known yet is his grasp of politics, and don't tell me the chief of staff is just about management, because in a business about politics, you got to know something about politics.
Sure.
So unknown, okay? Periphery vision, sometimes you got to be able to see things that are on the side that will become front and center and cost you weeks, if not months, of time that you can't afford. So we don't know that. So the unknown of his capacity, and I do think the general, now Chief of Staff Kelly, has the capacity of all these things, because he's been around at high levels of government, so he's not ignorant or tone-deaf to politics, but it's not in his core. You've got to be able to advise a president on both politics, policy, and press, the three P's. And if you can't do that, you're not going to be a capable Chief of Staff. When you look at whether it's in this new book, Gatekeeper, you look at a Leon Panetta, you look at a Baker, you look at a Podesta, just go the list of the successful versus not. Those are the ones that actually not just are orderly, but also grasp the politics of the moment and help steer the White House and the president for that. A question that hasn't been asked, but I know you're going to, Steve, will the president have a chief of staff?
Yeah.
You know, in the end of the day, he's right. The president. And the question is he going to have a chief of staff? Now, he's named him. Will he have him as chief of staff? And that's an unanswered question.
Well, these are the dominoes you don't want to fall. If you look over the people that have been surrounding this president, the people he's chosen, the only three that we can have reasonable confidence in my opinion, are McMaster, Mattis, and Kelly. If Kelly goes, are McMaster and Mattis going to follow? Mm-hmm. And then we got problems like we haven't even thought
about
yet.
The people he's hired reflect and undermine. Whatever happened, I worked for two presidents, and for President Clinton as senior advisor, and then for President Obama as chief of staff. You can have disagreements, but you cannot be undermining one in front of the in front of the staff, or have a sense that they're not. I think the way the president attacked both his chief of staff and communications director. If you want to do that, just give him a graceful exit, let him go on.
Right.
But to do what you did publicly, you know, the collateral damages, there was distraction on healthcare. There wasn't an attraction to the, what happened in Wisconsin, which was kind of a big deal.
It is a big
deal. Thousands of jobs that are going there. The GDP number that was up. He is his own worst enemy. Now, I actually think it's not an accident because people always say, oh, we need a businessman. They don't understand politics. And we see it in our governor's office. This is a businessman. He fired all his staff. He got overridden four times. It's and no sense of how to work with the other people, no sense of how to hear other, what other people are saying. And it's either my way or the highway, and then undermines people in that process. And I just think there's why, in both cases, nothing's getting done.
But the chief of staff can't be afraid, and I use this word loosely, you were never afraid or cautious when you went to Presidents Clinton or Obama to give your opinion.
No. I mean, I think, look, the good news is they would seek your opinion, even, and I will say this, there are moments, and it's not different. I had a view about healthcare, about doing something slightly different because it would take less time. You could do other pieces of the agenda, the political consequences, you know. President Obama knew my view at certain moments that were the kind of toughest part about passing the legislation. He asked how, you know, give me your opinion again. He was not scared to have it. That says a tremendous amount about him and his character. And the same thing with President Clinton on different things. So if they welcome contrarian views, if you're not scared of your own view and willingness to be challenged, you can have an unbelievably productive. Now, President Obama and I, every morning I'd be the first to see him, and at night we'd have this thing called the wrap. I have actually a picture. It was wrap up, and we would sometimes walk around the loop on the South Lawn, and sometimes we'd just sit in the office. We would go through everything, and it was just him and me. So whatever we wanted to say or whatever he wanted me to say, and he is not scared of being challenged. And you got to have a president that's willing to constantly be challenged about their assumptions, their judgment, and the political consequences, and be willing to say, okay, we got this wrong. Let's move. Let's flip.
So is that why Baker Reagan worked so well, because Reagan was willing to listen and willing to hear?
You know, there are two Bakers. Everybody goes to Jim Baker. You know, Howard Baker was quite successful as chief of staff as well.
Yeah, there you go.
The last 2 years. So I think they know the difference between there's a president and there's a chief of staff, and the president cannot be the chief of staff. I'm not going to be critical because I think he was a great president, President Carter, but at points of his presidency, he tried to be his own chief of staff, and that's a mistake. You're the president. Lead the day in and day out, and the drive, and the and what you need. In the same way, when it came to relationships with Congress, I'm not going to say I did it myself, but with Joe Biden, a senator of 35 years, Pete Rouse, Jim Messina, Phil up in Legislative Affairs, Ron Klain, you had about 160 years of legislative capacity in the White House, which is why it was one of the most productive first 2 years, where everybody was on the field, and President Obama didn't try to do what the rest of the operation did do for him. And he knew that.
It's a remarkable time and a frightening time, but Kelly is on the clock now, and the question is, how long does he stay? Because ultimately that won't be his decision.
I don't know if that's the ultimate question. The real question, I don't mean to do this, but the question is, will he stabilize this White House, and will he allow the White House and the president to stop getting in the way of what they're trying to do? Now, I'm not for what they're trying to do. I kind of like what the president's doing because he's constantly getting in the way of what he's trying to do, and I don't like what he's doing.
Right, but so I don't want Democrats to like him failing. You know what I'm saying? And I'm not saying you're saying that. But
I am
hearing,
saying that. I do like that. I think.
But from a political standpoint, I get it.
I want America to move forward is what you're saying.
Yeah.
But the president is, I mean, the idea you have a president, Steve, think about this, who's rooting for people to get hurt and not have health care so he could get a political win.
Which is why he's got to go.
So, yes.
And calling it a bailout, which it's not.
It's just, forget it. That is so lacking in core values. You want to get something done, I got it. But the idea that you're going to root for people to get hurt so you could do that?
Ridiculous.
In the same way that I will tell you this. This veto of an education bill that you agreed 90% so you can, you're governing through anger.
Well, that's hold on. We're fixing the country first. We'll fix the state in a second. Stand by for that.
Yeah.
Traffic first.
I'm taking my swag back.
And then more. Well, let's see how the next segment goes. So far, you only get the hat.
Yeah. I noticed you didn't take the hat off. You like that hat.
I like this hat. This is good. Yeah, it is. Mayor Rahm Emanuel, more in just a second on 720 WGN. Don't forget MLSsoccer.com and follow the Chicago Fire and support the Fire. It's a great story. MLS Soccer All-Star Game tonight. If you have tickets, I'd probably leave now. Traffic's going to be interesting. and get there and have a great night. You'll be there, obviously. Who's coming from the family?
I think Alana is going to come with me. And okay. She'll probably bring a friend. But also, if you could always divvy if you don't want to leave right now.
There you go.
You can divvy later.
You need an extra ticket? I can make a call.
Yeah. I was going to say the other way, but, you know, I'm okay. I think I got this one covered, but thanks.
I appreciate it.
I know you just wanted my tickets for Lala.
I just love this hat, man. This hat is working for me.
Yeah. Good on you.
All right, so here's the question. The governor gets the mandatory veto on this bill. The bill should have been on his S-4 now, but he's got it now. What is he going to do with it, and what's your take on it?
Look, he vetoed an education bill that he agrees with 90%. I really do. I think he's governing through anger, which is a mistake. He got overridden four times, and he fired everybody from his staff. It sounds very similar to one other person in Washington. And here is the case. 250 educators across the state, papers across the state. The governor's own commission recommended this because Illinois has the worst school funding formula in the United States as it comes to helping poor kids get out of poverty. And he vetoes the bill. Children in the city of Chicago are going to be in school day one all the way through the end of the school year and a full school day. I do not understand why a governor who, quote unquote, is sitting on the doorstep of rewriting something that people have been, everybody, Democrats, Republicans alike, educators alike, this is the one place they all agree on. And it's just because of anger, because he is upset that he got overridden four times, and now he wants to take it out on the kids across the state of Illinois who are, through no fault of their own, poor. And that's what he's doing, and it's a mistake, and he should actually sign the bill rather than have vetoed it. And now we're obviously, to get school on time for everybody, we're going to have to work across party lines and around the governor because he's the obstacle to reform.
Let me make you the political strategist. Okay, now you're on his team. What's the end game here? In other words, somebody's got to be talking to him saying, you want to be reelected as governor. What's the end game?
I think the only person talking to him is himself.
So you don't think he's listening to anybody?
Take a look at what happened in the office. Here's a classic example. He's never been in politics. Yesterday, when explaining what it took to deal with the bill, he didn't know the facts as it related to how many votes were needed for the override. He had no idea. And it's like 101. And so I don't think if he is listening to anybody, you should start firing them. Second is, I don't think he's listening to anybody because he's really governing through a level of anger. Because when you say, as the governor has said, I agree with 90% of this bill, not him saying, but his chief education officer, he agrees with it because it's a product of his commission. People for 20 to 30 years have said Illinois' funding of education is discriminatory. It penalizes poor kids, kids of color, because of their condition. We have to do something about it. We're on the doorstep of something history. And rather take a victory lap, having been the governor that ushered in a bipartisan reform, he is now trying to play regional politics, racial politics, and economic politics. And I think it's a mistake. And the children, and I mean this, deserve better.
Well, what do you say to people downstate who have an image, whether it's real or imagined, that's been built up over time, that Chicago gets an inordinate amount of funding, and it's not fair?
Okay. Actually, the main beneficiaries are the children downstate, which is why the Rockford paper, the Quad Cities paper, the Peoria paper, the Springfield paper have all endorsed the legislation. It's why the educators, superintendents of those school districts have asked for this to be signed, because the governor and even the Better Government Association said the governor is wrong, and is actually playing politics. The facts are not on the governor's side. The educators are not on the governor's side. The governor's commission is not on the governor's side. The governor is isolated because he's actually just angry. And that's not a way to lead the state.
The Springfield Journal Register, I think, had the story day before yesterday that said CPS is probably getting 12 to 13% of that money. So it's not this astronomical amount.
PGA, no, it's yes, I get the politics of trying to use Chicago as a punching bag. You want to do it on some other issue? Go ahead. But this is a historic opportunity. And I actually think, you know, this is a classic where I would walk into President Clinton, President Obama, and say, you have an opportunity to get in front of a parade with your baton and be the governor, or in that case is when I'm vice president, that actually authored and ushered in a fundamental reform that people have been, educators, papers, have all, everybody across the political spectrum have said, let's do. And rather than that, again, we're going to have to organize and work around the governor. Because he is an obstacle to the change that Illinois needs.
The change that Illinois needs, and listen, I don't want to be one of these guys, because I hate when this happens, and I just lectured Dan Lipinski on it. Don't back it up. Keep it simple. The fact of the matter is, the change that he's asked for over and over again, he hasn't gotten any of it.
That, well, that actually, that's not true. He has all the opportunities. I personally offered. He wanted to sell the Thompson Center. I said, I'll do it.
No, I understand. Exactly. I understand it. But in the big picture, and I don't want to make this about Madigan because I can do that too easily. Madigan has stood in the way as well. So, okay, 90%. I'm not disagreeing with you. 90% is 90%. There's nothing more tedious than hearing politicians go, it's about the kids.
Okay.
It's about the kids. And then screwing the kids.
Right, I got it. But first of all, it's extra money, which is important for the kids.
Right.
It's a rewrite of a formula that's been labeled the worst in the United States of America.
Right.
Okay, and this is about change. Now, let me say this. He's advocated a lot of change. Some of them workers' comp, which I supported. But when you compare workers' comp on a scale of 1 to 10, it's not even 12.
Yeah, but why why can't Madigan or Madigan's people, because I know Mike doesn't talk for himself, why can't Madigan's people into the governor's office and say, look, workman's comp will get done in a month. Just get on the page here because everybody else is on the page.
I understand. I'm as frustrated as you.
Yeah.
Okay? Here's the point, though. This is a product of the governor's own commission. This legislation was worked through.
I'm not arguing about the legislation. You're 100% right.
Say it again?
You're not 90% right.
Say it again?
You're 100% right.
All right, I got a phone number. I want you to call Amy first on anything like that. Just repeat it so I can put it on tape. Second, I want to say one other thing. I know that this is right, and you know the fact is other reforms the governor brought, this is a product of his commission. He asked to work on this to come to a consensus. As he said, this is a blueprint. And then when you veto it, nobody's going to work with you. Because if you sit down on legislation, you say, okay, here's what we're going to try to do, and here's the changes we're going to try to make. And everybody puts a year's worth of effort to work through to help the governor come to these changes. And you would then say when it's done, I agree with 90% of it, but I'm going to veto it. You know what that does to everybody else? I'm not going to work with you anymore. Forget it. This is not on the level. When you ask the commission, everybody rolls up their sleeves, puts a lot of sweat equity, a lot of intellectual work into something. You say, you know what? I like 90% of this, but I'm going to veto it. Everybody walks away and says, you know what? You're not for real. There's no way you can say yes. There's nothing to do with you.
There's nothing that can get done until we find a few grown-ups in a room. Somebody's got to go, I'm going to give another 1% or another 2% to get this done. I'm going to do whatever it takes.
Steve, I'm sorry. I would say you're 90% right on that.
Said you're 100% right. Okay, how come I only get 90?
Because we're grading on a curve.
Oh.
I would say this to you. On this one, that analysis does not work.
So the schools don't open then?
No, Chicago schools will open. Chicago kids will be there. I can't say that for downstate, and that's unfortunate. I'm responsible for the kids of the city of Chicago. The reason we went out and did what we had to do is because we knew a governor who actually will use politics both on region, class, and race to divide the state rather than bring it together. You have no idea. If everybody who sat here in this area and said, we're going to work on this, this is how we're going to take WGN, and you look at it and say, you know what, I agree with this, but we're not going to do it.
Nobody can run a business the way Springfield's been run and the way Washington is being run. It would have been shut down a long time ago.
Running state.
Let me ask you the same question I asked Susana Mendoza the other day.
Okay.
Is there anything the Democrats could do better? Anything?
Yes.
Okay. That's all we want to hear.
Yes,
the public doesn't hear that enough.
Yeah, of course we can do. I mean, look, I don't want to say this, but the children of the city of Chicago, their graduation rate tripled in the United States of America every year for the last 5 years. They led the United States in eighth grade math gains and led the United States in fourth grade reading gains. They are actually now, even though 85% of the kids are kids of poverty, they match the United States at 41% of kids going to college and another 21% or 20% going to community college. That's an incredible accomplishment, and that's being in a city of Chicago. I'm a Democrat. I'm responsible for it. We also have a community college system that is now noted by the World Bank as the best college career program. Because why? We know that through the classrooms and through the schools is a ticket to greatness. And we've put a lot of sweat equity, worked through a lot of issues, acrimonious at times, to give our kids a full school day, full school year, universal kindergarten, and make sure that they're ready for tomorrow. And that's among Democrats because it's a result-oriented approach.
All right. I want the state Democratic Party to improve. Can you get on that for me?
You don't pay me enough.
How about now?
Okay.
All right. I appreciate it.
I
want my swag back. I'll see you.
Yeah. Give me the hat back. All right, I know we're way late. Thank you for the extra time.
All right, man.
Appreciate it. And have fun tonight.
I'll see. Well, are you going to be there?
I was going to be there, but it's late for me. Can we get the game to start at noon?
Yeah, we can.
Can we move that on?
Yeah, but it's not going to do as much for the economics of the city.
You're right. Yeah, that's more important. All right. Thank you, sir. Mayor Rahm Emanuel. Nice to see him, as always. You need an effective real estate agent who can expose your home to the most buyers by creating a unique marketing and offer strategy and ultimately negotiate the most money possible for your home. Here's my recommendation. Amy Kite with Keller Williams Realty Infinity. Not only are Amy's fees flexible, you also get an immediate offer. Here's how it works. Amy helps you negotiate through multiple offers resulting from her marketing plan, which nobody can touch. Nobody. Give you a perfect example. Anita knows all about Amy Kite. Anita came back with a third property. Amy knocked it out of the park again, 11 showings, 7 offers within a week, and under contract in 6 days for $10,000. The only agent I'm talking about is Amy Kite. I think you ought to talk about Amy Kite, too. Pick up the phone and call her, 847-877-9881, or online at amywillsellyourhome.com. Educate me. What are we doing? I know we're super late here. All right, quick break. We're back with a very short newscast, and then we'll continue with the program. And Dean and all that on 720 WGN.